Big Jim McLean. This is John Milton Kennedy speaking, and bringing you the dramatized report of an investigator for the Senate Committee on Un-American Activities. The personal journal of a man and his job. The official report says that I was assigned to the case on Monday, September 15th, 1952. Unofficially, it was my anniversary. Nancy and I had been married exactly 1 week. But I guess Lowry, he's our chief investigator, isn't the sentimental type. Or if he is, his sentiment has a patriotic flavor to it.
I don't have to flag wave with you, Jim. You'd be halfway to Cleveland by this time if you realized the seriousness of these charges.
Lowry, this is a crank letter if I ever saw one. A factory full of communists ready to slip poison into every can of food shipped to our armed forces the minute we have trouble with Russia.
All right. I'll admit it is fantastic. But the National Food Products Company shipped thousands of tons of canned goods overseas during the war years. Not to mention what it turned out for civilian consumption. And any sort of trouble there during the period of national emergency could be costly.
Now, wait a minute. You mean if the commies really are entrenched at National, they could cause plenty of damage without using strychnine, is that it?
Mm-hmm. Right on the button. Work stoppages, wildcat strikes, absenteeism, or sabotage of any kind might contribute to an acute food shortage.
When do you want me to leave?
I made a reservation for you on the midnight plane.
I guess I'm not the first 6'4" guy who's ever been afraid of a 5'4" wife. I walked down Pennsylvania Avenue on the way home, hoping that a sight of the White House might give me inspiration. But by 10 o'clock that night, I still hadn't figured out how a guy can tell his wife of 1 week that he has to leave town, that he may be gone a few days, a few weeks, or a few months. Fortunately, Nancy's main interest in life at that moment were the curtains she'd just finished hemming, and so she hadn't been paying too much attention to me.
Those go on the middle window, Jim. I think those brackets that are up there ought to fit.
Yeah, it seems so. That's a break.
I knew there must be some reason for my marrying you.
Hmm?
Well, I couldn't have found many husbands tall enough to hang curtains without even using a ladder. What's wrong, Jim?
Well, nothing. Nothing's wrong.
You still sore because I applied for that job?
I'm not sore about anything.
Well, something's troubling you. I know it.
Nance, I've got a new assignment. I've got to leave for Cleveland in a couple of hours.
Well, that's not so terrible. I haven't actually started to
work
yet.
You couldn't come along, honey, even if you hadn't accepted a job.
Well, I'll come down and spend Saturdays and Sundays with you, can't I? Cleveland's not very far.
I'm sorry, baby.
Well, how are you planning to spend your weekends, Jim?
Well, working, probably, but that's not the point.
Well, maybe you'd better get to it.
It's this way, Nancy. The papers played up that last case too big. You know, Hawaii, the investigator on the case, finding romance in the magical islands, and a flock of subpoenas and a wedding license issued the same day. Swell copy, hit every newspaper in the country. Taking you along would be just like wearing a neon sign reading Big Jim McLean. You'd be a dead giveaway.
Well, what do you intend to do? Go disguised as a singer's midget?
I worried about Nancy's attitude the whole flight to Cleveland. But by the time I'd arrived there, my mind had turned to the job at hand. I rented a car the next morning. That was Tuesday, September 16th, and drove out to the factory on Euclid near East 140th. Maxwell Lincoln, National's energetic young president, proved 100% cooperative.
I'll give instructions to our personnel director to give you all the help she can.
She, huh?
Young and pretty, too, but don't let that fool you. Sally Combs majored in economics and business management at Chase University. Graduated with highest honors. Miss Wilson, get Miss Combs on the line.
Would you mind holding it for just a second, Mr. Lincoln?
Well, sure. Never mind, Miss Wilson. Yes?
I was just a little afraid of what you might tell her. You see, I'd like my identity and official position to remain a secret between the two of us for the moment, Mr. Lincoln.
Well, of course.
I'm registered over at the Holland and Hotel under the name of Jim Masters. And if anyone inquires there, they'll be told that I'm a bachelor who has lived at the hotel for years. It's just a little precaution.
Oh, I understand, and I wish you good luck in your work. But frankly, I hope you can't find a single communist in our whole plant.
I think it'd make me happier, Mr. Lincoln. It seemed like a 10-mile hike to the North Administration Building where the personnel department was located. And when I got there, I had a real shock waiting for me. Seated behind an impressively large desk was a girl who looked almost enough like my Nancy to be her twin sister.
Won't you have a seat, Mr. Masters?
Even her voice.
Is anything wrong?
I guess I was just thinking of something else.
Well, Mr. Lincoln said you were preoccupied with the job you're doing.
Yeah, that's it, Miss Combs.
He warned me not to ask any questions. But I can't help wondering if you're not doing this in connection with some sort of magazine article or something like that.
It's along that line, kind of.
Well, I'll do what I can. But so far as I know, there certainly isn't any organized communist group within the plant.
Well, are there any individuals that you feel might have communist leanings?
Well, I wouldn't want to accuse anyone without proof. Well, there's a man named Pete Chernak, who's foreman of Central Shipping. He's always agitating for something or other.
I'd like to talk to him. Can I get around the factory without causing suspicion?
I'll pin this little badge on you. That ought to do it.
Time study researcher. Makes me sound important.
I hope Pete Chernak won't give you a false impression of our company family. He's got a very bad leg. He drags along. I'm afraid it's made him rather bitter and surly.
Now look, mister, you want to ask me questions about the work here, okay, but you're trying to pry into a bunch of stuff that's none of your business. Now what's your angle?
Well, in doing a time study, Mr. Cherning, it's been determined that the men's work can be seriously affected by their frame of mind. So if some of the men spend their lunch hour talking about...
What they talk about in their lunch hour doesn't concern me. And even if I happen to know, I wouldn't tell it to a company stooge.
Now, you got me all wrong.
I think I'm getting you pretty right. What do you figure is the peak hours for this department?
I haven't checked on that yet.
Well, I was thinking maybe you might recommend a switch over to unit rates for this department. Any chance of that?
Well, it's worth thinking about.
Worth thinking about. Unit rates for Central Shipping. You're darn right I got you figured, pal. Time study researcher, huh?
Chernak was a little rough on you, eh?
If I have to depend on him for information, I'll hand in a ream of blank paper.
Well, maybe these will help. I've made lists of all the men in the plant I thought you might want to question.
Gosh, that's terrific, Miss Combs. Now, that's the kind of a lift a guy needs on the first day of an assignment. And look, if I can ever do you a favor, just name it. Sally and I continued to work closely together for over 2 weeks. But despite her help, I got exactly nowhere. The men on the list were either able to clear themselves or else refused to talk. I had hoped to clean up the case without calling on the character who'd sent that poison pen letter, because his reputation was about as wholesome as the odor of cheap whiskey and stale beer that emanated from his saloon on St. Clair Avenue, not far from the plant. But I was up against it. I arrived at Nick Rennert's Bar and Grill about 11 a.m. on Friday, October 3rd. But it took a long time to find out the reason for Nick's sudden patriotism.
All right, so I got a few black marks against me. That's why I figured if anyone caught wise that all them commies from over at National are making this their hangout, I might have my license yanked.
According to the records, you've gotten out of tougher spots, Nick.
Yeah, but these guys ain't worth taking no risks for, sitting around all evening chewing a rag. Guys like that cripple they call Pete, yelling so loud they chase out all the other customers.
Is Pete Chernik the one they said planned to poison the food sent to our armed forces?
Nah, he wasn't here that night. It was a fella called Snyder.
Bro, Schneider, something like that. Sam, his first name is.
Well, what did he actually say, Nick?
Well, a guy don't remember exact words for so long. But a bunch of them commies was talking about how Russia could lick this country without a speck of trouble. One of them said, sure, they had twice the number of A-bombs we had.
What was the name of the man who said that?
Well, I don't know the rest of them by name, but it was this guy Sam who claimed that no bomb ever invented could take over a country. That an army really had to move in with troops.
Yes.
So some other joker makes a crack about the U.S. infantry, and Sam says they ain't got nothing to worry about in that quarter, that the U.S. would be buying a lot of food from National in the next war, too, and that an army marches on its stomach.
I had one new name, Sam Schneider, or Snyder. But if he was a pal of Pete Chernik's, he'd probably been tipped off, so I decided to go after this one in a little different way. I talked to Sally Combs and told her that I might not be in for a couple of days, and then I headed for the local offices of the United Food Workers Union. Harry Kahn, its business agent, had a good record in our books.
It's S-N-E-I-D-E-R. Everything we got on them's right here on this card. Job qualification, employment record, dues payments, and home address.
Is Richmond Road near here?
No, it's pretty far around. Sorry, I can't tell you much about him, but he's a transfer from a California local. He's only been here since June of last year. Worked about a month over at Etna Canning on the west side and got a job at National.
Now what's this all scratched up here on the card?
Oh, he changed job qualification and departments a few weeks ago. Went from inspection to central shipping.
I phoned Washington for a check on Schneider, but it took until 6:35 p.m. for them to get back to me. Schneider was a man with a very colorful past, and the color was red. It was too late to find anyone of authority where he used to work, and I didn't want a chance going to his house at an hour when he'd probably be home, so I hit the hay early. The next day was Saturday, October 4th. I got an early start for the west side, but it was almost noon before I located the Etna Canning Company. It was a small plant on a hard-to-find street off Lorraine Avenue. I saw the head of the company, Mr. George Baird.
Not at all. I'm happy you found me here. I don't usually come in on Saturdays at all, but I have a luncheon meeting right near here today.
Well, I'll try not to hold you up for too long, Mr. Baird.
Don't worry. They're obliged to wait for the guest of honor. The Citizens for America are awarding me a little plaque for what they deem outstanding Americanism.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yes. Oh, here we are. Schneider, Samuel. Now, let's see. He was in our employ from July 6th to August 18th of last year. Worked satisfactory, but left to obtain a job elsewhere at an increased salary.
Did you know when you hired him that he had a long record of communist and communist front activities?
It's very difficult for a small plant like ours to obtain good help, but if I had known it, I certainly wouldn't have hired him. I'm sorry, there's nothing I can tell you that might serve as a constructive contribution to your work.
You've been very cooperative. I'm sorry I held you up. Oh, and congratulations on the honor that's being given you.
Thank you.
You know, it's too bad a few more people don't hand out plaques instead of throwing brickbats.
You can save your knuckles, mister. There's no one home at the Snyders.
Thanks.
You a bill collector or something?
No.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me any if they didn't pay their bills. The way he plays poker until all hours. You'd think those poker games were something, the way he carries on. Always sending his wife and kids out to the movies and not letting them back in the house until the men have
gone.
Now,
those poker games that the house is cleared for, do you happen to know who plays in them?
My husband would know. I'm not acquainted with any of them except Al Orniker. He's foreman at Phil's department over at National.
One more name. If I'd gone to Schneider's house the night before, I probably would have walked smack into the cell meeting and learned them all. Schneider's shift ended at 4 on Saturday, and it was almost that time when I reached the plant and headed for central shipping. There was an extra rush on to clean off the dock, and the cranes were scooping up huge piles of enormous crates. A dozen men were rushing around the loading platform, and any one of them could have been Schneider so far as I was concerned. I saw Pete Chernick shuffling toward me, so I hurried over to the timekeeper's desk.
With you in a second, mister. Pete Chernick, you haven't signed the dailies yet.
Couple of minutes, Art.
Okay. Do something for you, mister?
I was wondering where Sam Schneider was.
I'll get him for you.
Oh, look, I don't want you to...
Schneider, Sam Schneider. You wanted the timekeepers. Schneider, Sam... Watch out, mister! That crane's swelling its load! The stuff's coming right at you, mister! They better get out of the way!
Now back to our story of Big Jim McLean.
Oh.
Here, have a swig of this coffee.
So you found a way to shut me up, eh, Chernick?
You aren't hurt.
I feel as though every one of those crates had hit me head on.
The only thing hit you was Chernick. If he hadn't taken a flying tackle, you'd be nothing but a grease spot by now.
I see.
Run along, Art. No use both of us being late for dinner.
Okay, see you Monday, Pete. Night, mister.
Oh, I'm sorry I jumped to conclusions, Pete. I'd like to thank
you. I don't want your apologies, and I don't want your thanks. I still don't like snoopers, see?
Why'd you save me?
Because I got smashed up in an accident before you were born. When I got this job, I swore nobody'd ever get hurt here as long as I was foreman. The guy who caused that accident got booted out of the West Gate while you were still listening to birdies.
Now, there wasn't any accident. I think you know it.
I don't know anything of the sort. What are you trying to hand me?
The pattern's a pretty familiar one, Pete. You recognized me as an investigator for the committee my first day here, and you passed the word along to the boys. But when Schneider heard me paging him, he sort of lost his head. You saved the day by sending him packing before I could bring any charges against him. That might have brought a little too much out into the open.
That's what you think, huh?
Well, it was Schneider, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And do you deny that you hold a party card, number 45720?
Okay, so I've got a card. But I joined way back, after my accident. The guys I worked for gave me the boot even before I was out of the hospital. And the communists were the only ones who put up a squawk for me.
Seems to me, from what I've been able to find out, that National did more for you than just squawk.
The old man Lincoln was the only one to give me a job. I'll admit that.
But you're willing to see the party destroy the plant he built and that his son runs now.
I wouldn't do anything against the old man's son. But you're letting your imagination run away with you. There's no communist plot to destroy the plant.
The only way we can be sure is to check on everyone. Now, I want you to tell me the names of everyone in your cell.
Well, what do you want from a guy? I've admitted I'm a party member, but I'm not ratting on my friends.
Okay. But when you get home, you just think about the kids who've lost legs and some of them two arms while fighting the commies in Korea. Now, here, this is where you can reach me if you change your mind. I was too wobbly to start combing the city for Schneider, and besides, I know how the party works. By that time, I couldn't have found him with a telescope from the Mount Palomar Observatory. I didn't feel like food, so I went back to the hotel and straight up to my room. Hello?
Jim, are you all right?
Oh, yeah, I'm okay. I would have come up to your office to see you afterwards if I'd known that you'd heard about it. No, but I didn't worry you, Sally.
Sally? Sorry to disappoint you, Jim.
Nancy?
Yes, your loving bride. It's nice of you to remember me. It's been over a week since I got your last letter, and I've been worried and lonely. Apparently you aren't. Who's Sally?
Well, Sally happens to be a girl
that
I...
Well, I could have guessed that.
Now listen, Nance.
So you didn't want me to come to Cleveland, even for weekends. Someone might recognize me. And I swallowed all that. Well, have fun, Jim. I intend to.
Now, Nancy, let me... Nance! Stubborn little idiot. Yes?
Jim?
Well, I'm glad you decided to call back. Now, if you think for one minute that I...
I didn't call you before. Say, who do you think this is?
Sally?
Present. Right downstairs in the lobby. I had a date to meet someone here for dinner, but it looks as though I've been stood up. Have you eaten yet?
No.
Looks as though you're going to make me go all the way. Jim, you once said if I ever wanted a favor from you, I should name it. Well, I'm naming it. I want you to save me from the horrible fate of spending Saturday night all alone.
Okay, we'll do the town. Why not?
Gosh, it's been a scrumptious evening, Jim. You like this place?
Well, it's fine if you don't mind not being able to see 6 inches in front of you. They sure save money on electricity here. Yeah, I wish you wouldn't giggle like that, Sally.
You don't like girls who giggle.
Well, that's just it, I do. And I'm having enough trouble remembering that you just look like another girl who giggles.
I wish you'd stop talking in riddles and relax for about 2 minutes.
Well, 2:30 in the morning's no time to start relaxing.
Maybe it's the witching hour, Jim. It's time I confess that no one stood me up tonight. I came to the hotel on the chance I'd find you in, not tied up for the evening.
You're going to make me very conceited.
Why shouldn't a girl have a right to make pretty speeches? We can confine our relationship to business after tonight, if that's the way you want it. But Jim, I've got to tell you that you're the most attractive man I've ever...
You're a mighty attractive gal, too.
Kiss me, Jim. Just once.
Oh, look, Well, you know, this is pretty doggone hard to say, but... Well, here, take a look at this.
James McLean, investigator, Senate Committee on Un-American Activities.
I had to use an alias. That's my name, I live in Washington, and I'm married. I'm sorry if I've hurt you.
It isn't your fault. You never gave me any encouragement.
Maybe you can get some satisfaction out of knowing that you may have helped your country a little, Sally. That tip-off on Pete Chernick that you gave me the first day could pay off. I've got a sneaking idea that I'm going to get a call from at the hotel, and I'm hoping that it'll give me some real information.
I'm glad I was able to help, Jim. And now, if you don't mind, I'll take a taxi home. Alone.
I put her in a cab, and then I walked back to the hotel, feeling like a dog. I bought a Sunday paper at the desk, and after I'd undressed, I began to read. The political situation was still taut, and little orphan Annie was having a heap of trouble. And there was that little item about George Baird getting that patriotism award. Oh, those Sunday papers are sure big. It was almost 5 when I turned out the light and started to climb into... Who is it?
Chernick. Pete Chernick, Jim. out. What's happened to you?
Oh, someone must have heard us talking together. Figured I'd tell you what you wanted to know. About an hour and a half ago, they came to my house and dragged me out of bed, drove me way out the country and beat me up. I got away and they chased me for a while, but I gave them a slip in the darkness. I'll tell you anything I can, Jim. You call the shots.
Who's the top brass in the party, Pete? Who's been planning the strategy at the plant?
I don't know that. They hold special meetings on Sundays, but I don't know where or who goes to them. You see, I've never been willing to blindly accept everything they hand down from the top, so I guess they've never really trusted me.
Well, how many party members are there working at National?
I don't know that either, but I could pick out most of the names if I saw them.
Well, then let me slip into some clothes, and we'll go on down to the plant and check through the personnel files.
Now?
Well, I'd rather not have to ask Sally Combs for any more favors. She won't be there on Sunday. Besides, time might be important, very important.
I still don't understand what you're all excited about, Jim.
You will if Lowry ever comes back to this phone. Come on, Lowry, get on the ball.
Well, I'm looking, Jim. I don't see anything yet. Oh, hold on a minute.
But you've already talked to most of those guys, Jim.
And what I didn't know, Pete, was that almost every single one of them came to National from Etna.
Jim, that Americanism organization could be a phony, but I haven't a thing on it. Nothing in the files in George Baird either.
Well, there's got to be something. Did you look in the cross index?
Look, Jim, the closest thing I have to a name like George Baird is a Bert George, and I don't think he's your man.
Why not?
This guy was a college professor who got kicked out a couple of years ago for putting some things in the text that didn't belong there. Now, there's no possible connection with the operator of a small canning factory. You're on the wrong track, Jim.
Well, maybe not. This guy sounded as though he might have been a professor at one time. Hey, just a minute, Lowry. Now, what was the name of that college?
Chase University. Taught economics and business management.
That does it, Chief. You can go back to bed now.
What are you...
Bye. Hand me that piece of Sunday paper, Pete.
Sure. You know, Jim, if we could figure out where they hold their Sunday meetings, you might be able to...
I think it's right here in the paper.
What?
Here it is. Well known for his philanthropic and civic work, Mr. Baird is a resident of fashionable Lynnhaven. Now, where's Lynnhaven, Pete?
Oh, it's nearly halfway to Sandusky. I'm Route 6.
Well, I better clear the way because I'm coming through.
You fellas get over there on the side.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, get around here. Yeah, come on. That's right. Al, my men have the house surrounded, Mr. McLean.
Pretty fancy house for a small factory owner, isn't it, huh?
Yeah, sure right. So wait a minute. Here. Yeah, this key ought to work. Now, wait, Dick, are you sure you don't want a gun?
I'll let your boys handle that end of it. I've got my camera loaded.
Yeah. Well, here goes.
Jim, what are you...
What right have you to force your way into
a... All right, now. Get your hands away from that file, Mr. Baird. Everyone stay put, stand still. I've got a search warrant. My friend here has a few subpoenas he'd like to hand out.
Yeah, but first, a little picture, if you don't mind. Watch the birdie.
Why, you...
Thank you. Now, just try to talk your way out of that evidence. Their files contain carefully worked out plans for taking over the food center so vital to our nation. We found no evidence of a plot to use poison, but that was about the only bet they had overlooked. The Etna plant was a blind that served only as a training ground for the party members so they could learn just enough to get them by in the industry. And then Sally Combs, George Baird's honor student when he was a professor at Chase, placed them in key positions at National. And every single thing that she'd done had but one objective. She'd put the finger on Pete as a sacrificial goat because he was a nonconformer and they didn't trust him. She'd burdened me with long lists to delay my work, and she'd come to the hotel that night to find out just how much I'd learned. And when she discovered that I'd expected information from Pete, she sicked the goon squad on him. Well, that was the story. But I managed to forget the part about Sally Combs when I told Nancy a little about the case. However, Nancy managed to unearth a copy of the group picture that I'd taken at the Baird Mansion. You know how wives are.
Jim, have you noticed that girl in the picture looks a whole lot like me?
Nonsense, honey.
No, I mean it.
Well, not if you look close. Now, you've got a sort of an amused look, and hers is cynical. If you study your face, you can see that she's a lot older than you are, and more worldly. And her mouth has a cruel twist to it. She doesn't really look at all like you, honey. It's nothing but an optical illusion.
Thank you.
Any resemblance to actual people or organizations was entirely coincidental, but our story was based on fact. The role of Jim McLean was played by Jim Arness, and Doe Avedon appeared as Nancy. Others in the cast were Will Wright, Carlton Young, Shepard Menken, Florence Ravenel, Bill Boucher, and Joe Forte. Original music was composed and conducted by Frank Worth, and Bud Lesser wrote and directed. Big Jim McLean is a Wayne Fellows production. John Milton Kennedy speaking.